Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
I hope anybody's not stupid enough to write us off.
It's Two Stars time. This is the weekly Nottingham Forest podcast from The Athletic. On this episode, Luton lamentations, a frightening forthcoming fixture list, catching up with Kelvin, and celebrating Dibble Day. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Two Stars. Hey, listener, thanks for stopping by. I'm Matt Davis-Adams, here to once again guide us through another week in the life of the two-time European champions. I'm joined by The Athletic's Forest correspondent, Paul Taylor.
Morning, everyone.
Good morning. And the EST of NFFC, Nick Miller.
Oh, what's that? Oh, that doesn't sound like a wrestling name. What's that?
It is, yeah. It's Bianca Belair who will be challenging Sasha Banks for the SmackDown Women's Title WrestleMania next month, having successfully won the Royal Rumble. I'm really surprised you didn't know that.
Which, yeah, well, I was going to say, which obviously you don't need to explain that to me. I know full well that all that was happening.
Okay, so that's good news. Unfortunately, we are going to have to start today's episode on a downer with Tuesday's Luton loss. Forest 0, Luton 1 at the world-famous City Ground then, a familiar tale for the Reds of late. Low chances, no one to put them away. Luton did take one of their few opportunities, Ryan Tunnicliffe getting the only goal of the game midway through the second half. Paul, the action on the pitch couldn't live up to the pre-match hype slash old-school rave that for some reason was inflicted on the handful of people allowed into the City Ground.
It was extraordinary. It really was. I needed to ask the question, actually, about whether the club have actually got some new tannoy facilities in. I sound like Alan Partridge here. But it was so loud. It's always been a slight issue at the City Ground with the tannoy being a little bit tinny and a little bit weak. But goodness, when it came on, I was trying to talk to one of my old colleagues next to me, Lee, from the post, and it was like trying to order a drink at the bar. It literally just screaming at the top of your lungs to try and get your words out. It was remarkable. I'm presuming it was to do with the wanting the crowd noise to be a little bit more oomphy when the game started, because it certainly was. It did actually sound like there was, it was almost the volume of a normal crowd. So that's how loud it was. You know, my ears stopped bleeding at around midnight. So that was good. It was a great night all round.
And just to go full Partridge, it's a speaker system. Tannoy is a brand name.
Yes, I knew. Good Partridge knowledge. Well done. Maybe they could get some more speakers apropos achieving surround sound.
That's the dream. In terms of the championship table following this latest midweek round, Forest 16th, 8 points clear of third bottom Rotherham, albeit the Millers have two games in hand. So it's a good job we won there last week, really. Here's a tweet from David asking, now that the overreacting bottom half of Twitter have all decided we're the worst team in history again, can the panel cheer us up and tell us when we will be safe? Please don't say on the last day. Nick, even the nature of this question is interesting, isn't it? Because last week I was championing the old, hey, we're only 10 points off the playoffs cause, not really looking upwards anymore, I guess.
No, not really. The sort of good news is that there are comfortably three worse teams than Forest in the division. So I don't think we'd need to worry hugely about relegation or I suspect, and this is awful fate tempting, obviously, but I suspect not even an enormously close relegation battle. I think Forest will probably finish. And this is, this is keeping in mind the fixture list that we'll be talking about later on in the pod, but I suspect there's certainly enough in the team. There's enough, maybe even enough points, not quite enough points already to secure survival, but we have enough of a kind of base level of points to be okay. So yeah, I don't. While a defeat against Luton, and particularly the nature of the defeat against Luton is going to kind of get the hand wringers out, and not, you know, as we discovered last season. There's no guarantees with Forest, and they can scar us in many, many different ways, but I suspect we'll be okay.
Paul, I was thinking, as I was desperately searching for some positives after the Luton game, if you're going to have a nothing season where you finish in lower mid-table, this is quite a good one to pick, isn't it? You know, there's no supporters around. It's going to hopefully be quite a forgettable campaign all around. So if you're going to be rubbish this year.
It's almost about building for next season, isn't it? It sounds like a surrender and like a, you know, waving of the white flag, but it is. I don't think Forest are going to get sucked into relegation. Chris Hughton always talks about good performances leading to good results, and that wasn't necessarily the case against Luton. But whilst you're producing good performances, you always know you've got a chance of getting positive outcomes, and that was very much the case against Luton for an hour until they scored. Forest were utterly dominant. They created chance after chance. They were playing some really nice football. They were confident. They were slick. They were playing with urgency. And they were just, at the end of it, you were kind of, you know, we do our match report slightly differently, and we kind of pick a certain theme to look at. And it was hard because for about the 77th game running, it felt like we were talking, the main issue was the fact they couldn't convert chances, and that's going to be the story of the season, you fear. Certainly since, you know, Hughton started to have an impact in recent months, since the run of games against the sort of top six sides back in November and December, Forest have done really well. I think they've lost three in 16. But throughout that, there's been this kind of feeling that they haven't converted their chances. They haven't made enough of the opportunities they create. The last five or six games, I think they've only conceded, they've scored what? One, two, three. They've scored three goals in six games, which kind of tells you a story. Games in which they've played well and done well generally. And you get kind of a bit tired of it being the same issue every week. The fact that they're not converting these opportunities and turning good performances into the kind of results that they deserve. But I still think overall, when you look to the future, not just to the next run of games they've got coming up, but to next season, I think they can do so optimistically. In 2021, I think their form is still the sixth or seventh best in the division. So, you know, there is room for optimism to be found there. And if they can just find a way to find this killer touch and start putting more of these chances away, then it feels like that could be the final hurdle overcome. And we can start looking forward to a brighter future, whether that's this season or next.
I suppose that is the kind of the justification for the, well, we have been trying to play down that the pessimism, or I was trying to play down the pessimism earlier on anyway. That is the justification for it, is that Forest are sort of turning into a sort of TK Maxx version of Brighton in the, you know, just kind of dominating possession or playing really well and not actually scoring the goals. And I suppose the concern is that because it keeps happening, you wonder how quickly that problem is being solved. And it's not the other sort of perhaps slightly concerning thing is it doesn't seem to be a kind of issue to do with personnel, because you would have thought that someone like, you know, Glenn Murray would be exactly the sort of player to kind of solve that problem. So while I don't particularly share in the pessimism, that would be the sort of justification for it.
So that was Luton's first win at the City Ground since 1983. It came after the 1-1 draw against Derby last Friday night. Anything anyone would like to say about that? What's that, Joe?
Yeah, let's not kid ourselves. We didn't play. We didn't play Barcelona. It was Derby.
The third successive 1-1 between the teams then, and also, Paul, just a continuation of the theme that we've been talking about. Forest create chances, but they don't take them.
Yes. I got battered on Twitter by Derby fans after the game, because I watched Wayne Rooney's interview, and it kind of struck me that he seemed quite confused about it all. In one breath, he said that Derby were fortunate to get a point, and then in the next breath, he said that it was a fair result. And they were fortunate to get a point, and Forest can only blame themselves again, because they did miss chances again. They did fail to capitalise on their dominance, and you could kind of see the Derby goal coming. It was coming on the horizon for a little while before it actually came, and it felt slightly predictable by the end of it. But also, you know, that didn't lessen the disappointment of it. It was probably the least deserved equaliser since Derby's last equaliser in similar circumstances against Forest. It was all too familiar. And I'm very much in the glass half full camp rather than the glass half empty. I do feel optimistic about the future. You can see that Chris Hughton's building something positive, and that there is an identity being forged in the team that hasn't been around for a long time, perhaps since... You know, you got a sense of it early in Sabri Lamouchi's tenure, but this is as much identity as the team's had in a little while. And I'd rather be positive about that than negative, but they do just, without labouring the point, they do just need to solve this one last problem now, just to make themselves more of the complete package, because you can't keep going into games creating 5, 6, 7 really good opportunities and coming out of it without scoring. It just, that's only going to lead one way, and it isn't a very good way.
Anything from the game that stood out to you, Nick?
Nothing that Paul hasn't kind of already mentioned. The just sort of frustrating predictableness of it as much as anything, not just the 1-1 draw against Derby, which I'm kind of slightly annoyed I didn't predict before the game, because it just feels so inevitable. But as soon as those, you know, didn't stick away a lot of those chances that created in the first half and sort of the first, 15, 20 minutes of the second half, you could just see it coming. And, you know, granted, it did take a pretty special goal to get the point for Derby. Yeah, it was just, you could definitely see it coming. On a slight tangent, one positive to do with Derby this week, Sheffield United, of course, won, meaning they are on 14 points for the season.
David McGoldrick with a goal as well.
Yeah, David McGoldrick with a goal. Lovely touch. Taking them off the magic 11 points, meaning that record the record stays solely Derby's for another season.
Yeah, just to reiterate that, listen, the record Nick's talking about is that Derby County are the worst team in history. That's the worst team in history. They managed 11 points from a season, 2007-2008. Go look it up. Worst team in history. Right, after a run of games against fellow lower mid-table sides, things are about to get a whole lot tougher for Forest. We'll preview a fearsome set of fixtures next.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
So between now and the start of April, Forest face a fixture list that could accurately be described as daunting. The Reds' next 5 games are as follows. Watford away on Saturday, Reading at home on the 13th, Norwich at home on Wednesday the 17th, then it's away to Brentford on the 20th, and then Cardiff in South Wales on the 2nd of April. That noise you can hear is 3 middle-aged men gulping. reasons to be positive ahead of these games, Paul. In your post-Luton piece, you point out that Forest have kept clean sheets in half the games they've had under Chris Hughton. So that end of the pitch, at least, he seems to have figured it out.
Yeah, absolutely. What Forest are tough to beat. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you'd take 5 points from this from 5 draws, but, you know, they are much more organised and much more disciplined. The back four doesn't drastically change from week to week. We know he sometimes swaps Bong and Yuri Ribeiro around at left back, but other than that, there's a consistency there. Worrell and Figueiredo are starting to look like the decent partnership they were for long spells of last season, with Worrell looking pretty comfortable playing on the left side and Figueiredo kind of proving that he isn't quite the error-strewn liability that lots of fans unfairly thought he was for much of the start of the season. He's kind of got back to the level of form that we know he's capable of. So you kind of take some encouragement and hope from the fact that they are a much tougher nut to crack. None of these teams are going to find playing Forest easy any more than they're going to find these games easy themselves. So there is I guess to sum up a very waffly answer, I think the fact is that in comparison to last time Forest went into this kind of run of fixtures in November and going into them now, I feel very, very differently about their chances of getting something from all of these games. Watford away for me is perhaps the toughest of them all at the minute, but you know, if they could get something as a starting point, even a draw at Watford this weekend, I think they could go into the remaining games. Certainly they could deafen Reading and Norwich into defeat in the two home games next week, so that'd be a good starting point.
Forest lost all but one of the reverse fixtures of these games. The exception was the 0-0 at home to Watford, who the Reds face next. They also only scored two goals in those five reverse games, those in defeats against Norwich and Brentford. But, Nick, they do have Kravinovic, Garner and Murray now. They've all made an impact, although has Murray done much since Wickham? I know you're a big fan.
I'm a big fan now. Maybe this will lead to me, you know, a slow burn justification for my pessimistic predictions, which I
we all know that's what you're hoping.
Yeah, well, yeah. Which granted, I then did completely reverse. But you know, it's a changeable world. I've reserved the right to change my opinions about these things. You know, goals have dried up a little bit for Murray, but I think that the form of Kravinovic and Garner behind him is much kind of more encouraging. I was slightly sceptical about Kravinovic when I saw him last season. He seemed kind of slightly ineffective, but he's been I think much brighter than I thought he was going to be in the few games he's played for Forest so far. It's just very kind of neat and tidy, and some very sort of smart little passes that he plays. And then obviously Garner has added a sort of kind of more creative element to the central midfield. I'd really like to see, and to a point this has been kind of hampered by Ryan Yates's fitness, but I'd really like to see Yates and Garner together. I think they, while Cafu has done reasonably well next to him, I think those two playing together would be a really kind of excellent duo, where Garner would just kind of maybe sit a little bit, and Yates can do his kind of box-to-box thing that he does so well. It's quite interesting. I was speaking to a journalist who covers Manchester United recently, who says that Garner is actually, or they kind of thought of Garner as a bit more of a forward-looking midfielder, someone who kind of would break into the box late, which he hasn't done a huge amount for Forest, I don't think. There was obviously the goal against Derby, but that wasn't quite in that same mould. But it's interesting that he seems to have played a little bit deeper for Forest and has been in that kind of controlling the centre of the park role, rather than a sort of breaking past the forwards and into the box.
Paul, Nick mentions Ryan Yates there. He's missed the last two with a recurrence of this calf problem. Any word on him, on Graben, Sal, Scott McKenna and Harry Arter too, I notice, is back in training. Any of them likely to be available for Saturday?
After the game against Luton, Chris Hughton said that Lewis Graben probably wouldn't be available for the game this weekend, which is a blow, because you know, somebody with his calibre of finishing is always going to be an asset when you are creating so many chances. And I know he's played a fair number of games, but I think it's only about 14 or 15 starts this season. He's missed large portions of the campaign through injury, and those have been intermittent as well. Sort of, there's been injuries between those little spells where he has been in the side. So we'll forgive him a little bit for not finding his full match sharpness. And I think if they had a Lewis Graben firing in all cylinders, and he was such a key figure last year when he got 20 goals without, in a side that didn't create, it felt like, it didn't create as many chances as this one does. So if you could have a fit and sharp Lewis Graben back and sort of dining out on the number of chances Forest are currently creating, you'd think they'd be far better off straight away. Sadly, that won't be this weekend. I think Ryan Yates has got a small chance of being involved, but I'd be somewhat sceptical about whether he does play or not. McKenna's only been back in training for a little while and was out for some time, so I wouldn't expect him to play. Harry Arter's a curious one, because he still hasn't got a squad number, and there's only one left at the minute. So I wonder if Forrest would rush into giving him one when, you know, there's still, what if one of the goalies got injured? They'd then have to, you know, find a space for Diallo. And if they give that space to Arter, then they've immediately given themselves a potential problem at goalkeeper. So I don't think they'd necessarily rush into bringing Arter back unless they had some sort of midfield injury crisis, because they've got a lot of options at the minute when you look at Colback and Yates and Cafu and You know, even Krivinovic could play a bit deeper if he needed to. Garner, they've Sow's back as well. You know, they've got a lot of options in midfield that they don't really need to rush filling that last squad space for just for the sake of it.
Yeah, it's almost like they signed too many players in the summer. Speaking of which, here's a question via Twitter from my friend Adam, who says, "Knock Art is reminding me of the scene with the Yakuza boss in The Simpsons at the moment. But Marge, that little guy hasn't done anything yet. Look at him. He's going to do something. You know it's going to be good." Nick, what does Knock Art need to do to convert these nearly moments into beating up some Italian mobsters in a cartoon? / scoring goals.
That's a remarkable comparison. I love it.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of that. He's. I don't think he needs to do a huge amount differently. I think he's. This is always a slightly sticky subject, or slightly iffy thing to say about anyone. But he has been quite unlucky. A couple of the shots he's had that have, you know, hit the bar or just gone over or just gone wide. Few inches either way, he'd have 4 or 5 goals for Forest already. He's initially he was I would agree he looked sort of a little bit ineffective. He had the look of one of those players that, you know, seems threatening but actually isn't a lot of the time. But now he seems to have kind of settled into the role a little bit more. He seems to be playing every week, and then it's whoever is on the kind of other wing that is rotated a bit more. I don't think he particularly needs to do anything different. I mean, maybe Paul would have a better idea of this, having watched him much more closely than I have, but he seems to be kind of playing well and kind of getting there, and he at some point, and I know we're saying this about the team in general, really, but at some point the goals will come.
Do you think, Paul? I was going to go with unlucky as well, which makes me feel better that that's what Nick said.
He does seem to have improved significantly since his loan was renewed. He's been a renewed figure since then as well. He's looked very bright, and he seems to play with a bit more urgency and confidence. And against Luton, for 20 minutes, he was outstanding. And against Derby, frankly, at times he was taking the piss. It was just with his little tricks and his little touches, and he's capable of the sublime and the ridiculous. And I agree with Nick, he doesn't quite get the reward for some of the quality he produces. He puts some great balls into the box. He should have had a couple more assists, but not through his own fault, just because, you know, again, those chances have gone begging a little bit. I think since he's renewed his loan, he's been brilliant. I'd go that far. I'd drop out brilliant, because he has been. And I think he's only fine margins away from that brilliance being rewarded, and hopefully him playing a key role in Forest continuing their climb up the table. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him in the summer, because, you know, you imagine it would take a fair chunk of cash to you know, get him to the City Ground on a more permanent basis. And I guess it all might revolve around what division Fulham are in as well. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch in the summer. I'd still be cautious about paying a massive amount of money for him and putting him on huge wages. But if they could find a way to keep him on a reasonable basis, then I'd be a big fan of that idea.
Yeah, I think most Forest fans would. In terms of the head-to-head record against Watford, Forest no wins in the last 4 meetings. Last victory at the Vicarage in September 2011. Anyone like to tell us who got the only goal that day? Give you a clue. Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, I think is it Ismail Miller?
It is, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You get that from the clue?
No, well, it helped. But I remember, because I think that game was on TV, and it was kind of early McLaren era, wasn't it? And obviously, this was one of Miller's early games. And I can remember of all my very, very, very many incorrect predictions about Forrest, him scoring in that game made me think, yeah, he's going to be great for us. He's going to score loads of goals.
He was a decent player. He was just made of biscuits. They signed him when he hadn't played. I think I'm right in saying he hadn't played 90 minutes of football at any level in 3 previous years because of injury, including reserve level. He hadn't completed 90 minutes of football in years when Forrest signed him, and duly he arrived and proved that wasn't a fluke.
going to be really awkward if he's this week's did they really play for Forest in about 15 minutes time, isn't it? Watford against Forest kicks off at 12:30 on Saturday lunchtime. It's live on Sky Sports if you're in the UK. Hey, remember Kelvin Wilson? Of course you do. Get ready to learn more about the former Reds defender next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Athletic subscribers have had a couple of days now to devour Paul's big interview with former Forest defender Kelvin Wilson. Before we discuss the article, here's a clip of Paul in conversation with Kelvin over a slightly crackly telephone line. Kelvin told Paul that the club thought they were doing a favour to players from Nottingham, himself, Julian Bennett, David McGoldrick, Wes Morgan, by letting them play for the club and therefore offered less money in contract negotiations. Here he tells the story of what happened when he turned Forest's offer down and agreed to join Celtic at the end of the 2010-11 season.
I want to stay at Forest, let's get that clear. You know, Billy wanted me to stay, I want to stay. I knew what players were on financially in that changing room. You know, I'd been there for 4 years now. But Mark Arthur and it was Nigel Doherty, their era, so they had a way of doing things. How they did it, if you was from Nottingham, no matter who you was, apart from Andy Cole when he come, but if you was from Nottingham, you was basically, we're doing you a favour letting you play for Forest, so you've got to take this money. That's basically what it was.
Right.
You know, me, Wes, Julian Bennett, Didsey, that's how they all seen us. You're from Nottingham, you know how proud it is to play for Forest. So my contract come to an end and I knew what players were on and what they were earning and I had to figure out my head what I wanted.
Yeah.
So me and my agent went to Forest for that and they said, no, we'll offer him this, which was nowhere near what I said. But let's not, you know, what I did want, it wasn't ridiculous. It wasn't to be the highest paid or nowhere near it. Trust me, it was just to be on the even playing field with some. They didn't want to do it. They said, no, we're only offering this. So we said, okay. And a few interested clubs who were saying, we'll have a look at the end of the season, you know, Premier League clubs. But then Neil Lennon come in, offered me to go to Glasgow on an international week.
Mm.
I said, yeah. Went and had a look round. Then they offered me a contract, like there and then, really.
Yeah.
Which was, it blew away the money that I even thought I wanted at Forest. You know, they offered me more, so I was like, bloody hell, I must be a good player if they offer me this.
Reaction to that, Nick? Seems an odd and slightly disrespectful policy to have set out.
Yeah, I mean, presumably it wasn't official club policy, but the we'll trust Kelvin Wilson's recollections of that. Just incidentally, I was disproportionately delighted about how obviously Nottingham Kelvin Wilson
same
sounds.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because you know he's from Nottingham, famously from Nottingham, played for both teams in Nottingham. So I don't really know why I doubted that that would be his accent. But yeah, anyway, disrespectful, maybe kind of unintentionally. It just seems like the sort of slightly odd way that Forest kind of did things around that time. Just I know this was a few years before that, but Forest fan and actually former Forest employee Simon Bristow, I think we probably all know, posted a leaflet on Instagram the other day. The leaflet said, "We're serious about promotion. Are you?" And it was one of those things that's kind of gone down in myth that I was always slightly surprised when I actually see the artifact itself. But it's that sort of thing that kind of fits with the you're from Nottingham, so you'll sign for less money than everyone else. It's just the kind of haphazard and just slightly. I think it's one of the things that, God bless him, that sort of encapsulated the Nigel Doughty era, really. A good man with good intentions who got a lot of things just slightly wrong. This seems to be seems to kind of fit with that.
Yeah, definitely. What was interesting following on from that, Paul, was Kelvin going on to talk about not wanting to risk injury after he'd agreed to join Celtic. It's the kind of thing that that really riles supporters, but I think is totally understandable. And if we flash forward to the present day, or not that long ago anyway, we saw Lyle Taylor do exactly the same thing last season with Charlton, so that he didn't jeopardise his move to Forest.
I can see both sides. You can absolutely understand Kelvin's point of view of saying, look, if I've got a minor niggle, I'm not going to risk it. I'm not going to train. I'm not going to play. And you can also understand the club saying, well, if they've got any doubts about whether he's going to be putting his body on the line, should we say, without being too cliched, then why should they risk him being involved? I get it from both sides. The club thought they were doing the best thing in the interests of, you know, the football team. And I would like to say that, you know, I agree with Nick on the assessment of Nigel Doughty. He was a thoroughly decent, thoroughly friendly and nice guy who only ever had the best intentions of Nottingham Forest at heart. He did everything he could to make Nottingham Forest a success. And just from talking to him, you know, back in that era, you could see how much it meant to him to try and make Forest a success. It was everything to him. And when they won promotion from League One, just seeing the joy on his face and what it meant to him was one of the best things about that day, to be honest. But yeah, he did sometimes get a few decisions wrong. That wasn't because he didn't want to, you know, make things a success, but he just didn't always have the best judgment in some things. And if Kelvin's feeling is true about this, and he does kind of intimate that others felt the same way, then, you know, it was one of those areas where it felt like they did get it a bit wrong. Had they just given him something closer to what he wanted, and he said it wasn't, you know, anything that would have made him close to being the highest earner at the club, then he would have stayed and none of this would have happened. It just felt like a bit of a wasted opportunity because of a curious standpoint about believing that Nottingham lads would be so desperate to play for Nottingham Forest that they'd be willing to take less money to do so. I think it wasn't just Kelvin that they found out this was wrong with. It was, you know, Chris Commons as well and one or two others who moved on perhaps because of the financial side of things.
Nick, is it fair to say that Forest didn't get the best out of that crop of Nottingham boys? I guess you'd say maybe with the exception of Julian Bennett, but we've spoken about Chris Commons and Wilson too. But, you know, Wes Morgan left Forest for peanuts and lifted the Premier League trophy a few years later.
I still think him scoring that goal against Notts County will be the high point of his career. Definitely. I always found Kelvin Wilson a slightly frustrating player. Not least, there was a game against Sheffield United. I think it would have been in his first spell where he got sent off stupidly in, I think, the first half. And I can't really ever remember being more annoyed at a player than I was in that. I can't remember who it was that he went sort of head to head with, but it was just one of those really pointless sendings off where he didn't, you know, you the old cliche of you'd rather him just kind of leather the bloke rather than just sticking his head in his face and pushing it away just so stupidly. And that sort of seemed to, he was, you know, he's obviously a very good defender, probably more so in his first spell than his second spell, as he showed by, you know, by being very good for Celtic for a few years, which is, you know, there's some really good stories about that era in Paul's piece as well. But for Forrest, I always found him just very, very slightly frustrating. Like he could have been much better than he actually was or actually played for a lot of the time when he was at Forest.
Yeah, so he goes to Celtic, has some memorable Champions League nights, comes back with some title winners, medals and Lionel Messi's shirt. He returns to Forest in 2013. Injuries, though, quickly meant that he wasn't the same player. Retired in October 2016 after a brief spell at Rotherham. Paul, he's still in the game now, isn't he? And he's not totally ruled out a return to action at some level.
Yeah, he's a defensive coach at Ilkeston locally and from, you know, just talking to him about it, it sounds like he's really enjoying it. And he said that he never thought he'd really go into coaching, but he's kind of having a slight change of heart, I think. And it'd be interesting to see if he does end up doing it at a higher level at any point. I think I was going to say something that was extraordinarily patronising, but he's a rather more intelligent and deep-thinking player than I remembered him being when he was at Forest. I remember, perhaps it's because when we were both very, very young, and I was young once, I was there when he made his debut. I was covering Notts County for the local paper then, and I was there when he made his debut at Hartlepool when he was 17. I remember it as clear as day, even talking to him afterwards about it, and perhaps it's because we kind of grew up together in that sense that I didn't see him as this kind of deep thinking individual that he perhaps more is than I thought. But I think that perhaps he's a coach in there and somebody who does have something to offer to the game just purely because of the experiences he's had. You know, going to the Nou Camp, and I know it's only one game, but marking Messi as he did in that game, and doing so well in Europe generally for Celtic, they were gutted when he left, and I think they were certainly sad to see him go, which is a sign of how well he did. But then they replaced him with Virgil van Dijk, so you know they probably did all right out of it in the end.
There's loads more detail in the piece that we haven't covered here. If you're not currently a subscriber, head to theathletic.com/forestpod to sign up now for just £3.99 a month for the first 6 months. Right, the retro vibes continue next as we celebrate the anniversary of one of the greatest moments in the post-Miracle Men era.
Here's Parker. And it's Crosby coming round the back, and Dibble got it at the second attempt. Oh, and Crosby's pinched the... Oh, has he given the goal? He has! My word! Gary Crosby! And Dibble is livid! And Manchester City have surrounded the referee, Roger Gifford. This is what happened. Well, the ball was only resting on one hand. Was it in his grasp? The referee said no.
Well, we're recording the show this week, the day after the 31st anniversary of that time Gary Crosby headed the ball out of Andy Dibble's hand in front of an equally bemused and thrilled Bridgford End to give Forest a 1-0 win against Manchester City in the 89-90 season. Nick, you were there. You must have been incredibly young at this time.
Yeah, I would have been 6 years old, I think, 6 or 7 years old. But I do remember it. I mean, it's stupid, the stuff that you kind of... It's the old cliche of someone growing old is that I can remember clear as day this controversial goal that happened 31 years ago, but you know, can't remember what I was supposed to be doing 5 minutes ago. But yeah, it was as I remember, it was the if you watch the kind of footage back, there's the mood in the ground seemed to sort of mirror Martin Tyler's reaction, where he just kind of goes, "Oh," and Gary Crosby's, "Oh no, hang on, it's a goal. He's given the goal. That's actually going to be a goal." Everyone just kind of because less that everyone was sort of sat there thumbing through their law, you know, football law books, and you know, poring over Law 12, which is the actual law that would govern this kind of thing. It was more that it was just such an unusual thing that no one you can very rarely seen before, that people just weren't sure how to react. And you know, then when it's always enjoyable when the opposition so kind of vehemently and angrily kind of protest against a goal like that. But yeah, I just remember brief confusion followed by a lot of laughter in the ground at the time.
Paul, if you watch the clip again, there's so much to love about it. Forest in one of their all-time great kits, City countering with that lovely sky blue brother number, Gary Megson being wronged, Peter Reid playing peacemaker. It's just delightful.
It is one of those clips that, regardless of your loyalties, or well, unless you're on the opposition side, it's brilliant. It's joyous. It's great. It's outstanding. It's an act of outrageous cheek. That what disappoints me is how it would, you know, you get the sense that perhaps not exactly the same circumstances, but it feels like the joy's been taken out of the game on this front in the modern era. You know, they'd have VAR looking at it, or they'd have, you know, 18 different camera angles deciding whether it's going to be a goal or not, and it just wouldn't be the same kind of moment now, which is sad. I think that's the saddest thing that I find when I look at clips like that. I always think, would it happen now? And probably think, no, it probably wouldn't. But yeah, it was a joyous moment, and one that has to go down as one of the best moments in Forest's more recent history. There's got to be an Athletic piece in there somewhere, hasn't there?
I really enjoyed the Guardian match report that you shared with us, Nick. Some choice lines in there. Dibble no doubt mistook the day for Palm Saturday, being my favourite.
Yeah, I know the guy who wrote that is a dear old man called Jeremy Alexander, who I think is still working for the Guardian, or is it certainly only just stopped working for the Guardian, having kind of been writing reports for them since the 60s. Personally, my favourite line from it was, "It was saucy, but was it fair?" which is not only lovely stuff, but also classic Jeremy. If you know him, he's a kind of low key legend in among sort of certainly people who have worked at the Guardian in the last 40 odd years. But yeah, he's a wonderful man, and that was a wonderful report.
I had a tweet from Chris Gorham, who's the Norwich City commentator for BBC Radio Norfolk, and he sent me a picture from a game in December at Carrow Road, or before it. Andy Dibble, currently on the coaching staff at Cardiff, and in this picture, he's warming up the goalies with a ball in the palm of one of his hands. He hasn't learned a thing.
Well, you see, I think it was a season after this that the laws were, or certainly very shortly after this, that the laws were changed. So that is actually now illegal. And, you know, I think we've seen a couple of times where players have tried to whip the ball away from goalkeepers when they've thrown it in the air to kick out of their hands. I think Thierry Henry did that once against Wigan, I think it was. So they've been disallowed now. So it's kind of the law seems to have changed that if it's sort of vaguely under the goalkeeper's control, or, you know, some kind of he's got controlling vibes over the ball or something, that it's now illegal. So actually, I think Dibble has been studying the laws, and he now realizes that it's it would be very illegal these days.
In the warm up.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah,
well done, football's fun police. Yeah, cheers. We'll call that Dibble's law.
Goalkeepers are ridiculously protected now, aren't they? But that's probably an entirely different podcast subject. You can't go near a goalkeeper at all. I've seen a few incidences, in fact, in recent games where there was one foul given for a push on a goalkeeper that was absolutely very obviously by his own player. And it's like, what's happening now? You know, a goalkeeper goes down, it's a free kick. It's just happening, isn't it? It does matter.
Always. And Bree Samba is absolutely making the most of that, and we love him for it. Finally, Nick, who did it better, Gary Crosby or David Johnson?
A weakness in Forest, but maybe a little bit of a frailty.
Oh, and David Johnson has nipped in, and Nottingham Forest take the lead in bizarre circumstances. Robert Green was totally unaware that Johnson was standing right behind him, and Forest are in front in a strange, strange way.
Well, bizarre is not the word I'd use. I'm sure it's not what the manager Nigel Worthington would use. You cannot put a game.
Yeah, it's slightly less fun. There is a kind of there's. Firstly, Rob Green seems like a really nice bloke, whereas Andy Dibble, I'm not sure I would particularly enjoy his company quite as much. So,
ouch.
Yeah. So it's always more fun to see, you know, someone like that be wronged or not wronged at the time, or believe he'd been wronged. It's just a kind of rather than a particularly unique or amusing incident. It was just a moment of doziness that for David Johnson's, which incidentally, if people haven't seen this one, I mean, I'm aware that, so this would have been about 2004, 2005. I'm aware that there are may possibly be young people listening to this that may not remember this. But game Forest against Norwich, Rob Green had the ball in his hands. I think he caught a corner or a cross or something like that, rolls it out in front of him, and he didn't notice that David Johnson was behind him, so he kind of nipped in and took the ball off his toes and put it into the empty goal. I think Dion Dublin did something similar in the Premier League a few years earlier on, and it's just one of those things that make goalkeepers look very, very silly, but they aren't sort of wronged in any particular way.
Yeah, I was in the Trent End that day, and it was at that end when the goal was scored, and Robert Green did extremely well not to crumple to the ground in floods of tears, given the abuse that he got for the rest of that match. Right, we're on the home stretch now. Still plenty of time to get quizzical, though. Yes, it's the feature where Nick takes a former Forest Forgotten man and makes me and Paul feel bad about our long-term memories or lack thereof. Over to you, Nick.
Yep, okay, so this is another edition of Did They Really Play for Forest? You probably know the drill now. 5 pieces of information about a famous player who had a short/forgettable spell at the City Ground. So, clue number one. In my first league appearance in England, I played alongside former Forest loan hero Damian Johnson.
Ooh, okay. Damien Johnson. Was this kind of around that 03-04 period that we were just talking about, Paul? Would that be right? Mm. Former Birmingham player, wasn't he? Irish Damien Johnson. I'm just filling here so that we can carry on thinking of guesses. Have you got one?
We're not having another first round glory moment here, I'm afraid.
Okay. Keith Foy.
No, that's a very good shout. Could have been a really good player, Keith Foy. Anyway, clue number two. I have won league titles in two different countries and major trophies in two other countries.
Yeah, it wasn't Keith Foy.
Two different countries.
Yeah. Which countries could they be, though, I wonder? Maybe it's because of the Kelvin Wilson thing, but I'm sort of thinking Scottish players or players who came from Scottish teams to play for Forest. No, nothing from me, Paul.
Oh, I've got an idea, but I can't think of his bloody name.
That's really crucial in this game.
do you want to describe his face, Paul? Maybe give you half point for that.
Did he have Ryan Bertrand's eyes?
No, he oh, no. Luke Steele.
No.
Blue Steele, okay, next clue.
Okay, clue number three. I have scored a Champions League goal against Barcelona in the Nou Camp, although my team that night lost 4-1.
Oh, okay. Paul, have you got a guess?
You sound like you know.
Is it Nicholas Bentner?
It is Nicholas Bentner. It's slightly tricky one to. I decided I wanted to pick him. A slightly tricky one to do because there are only really obscure clues and then clues that will kind of give it away. And the third one obviously kind of tipped over the balance. Do you want to have a guess what the next two clues are going to be? Because they are two kind of quite prominent pieces of information about the great man.
Got fined more than UEFA fine clubs for racist behaviour for having some pants with Paddy Power on them.
Yeah, that's one of them. That was going to be clue number five.
He's known as Lord.
Oh no, that wasn't one of my clues, but it also correct piece of information. Clue number four was going to be a sports psychologist once gave me a self-perceived competence test to see how good I thought I was. The test was marked out of 9. I scored 10.
I mean, if he could have just married a bit of confidence with actual football ability, he would have been an incredible player.
Yeah, he's kind of a, sort of budget version of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, really. He's probably somewhere chipping off about LeBron James or something.
Did he score for Forest?
I think he
scored. We got two goals, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah, I think they were possibly both in the League Cup. I don't know whether I've got that.
I remember one of them being a fairly close range scramble, if I'm right.
Made his debut in the League Cup against Arsenal. After which, Arsene Wenger asserted, if he keeps fit, he still has a chance to come back to the top level. I think a hungry Nicholas Bentner can score goals against anybody, and that's what you want from him. The next line on this Wikipedia entry, on 11th of December, Bentner scored an own goal against Forest rivals Derby County.
He almost scored two in that game, didn't he? Yeah. Didn't he hit the bar with another effort?
He's one of those players where you kind of you often hear about players who have, I'm sure this is incredibly common in football, who have incredibly overinflated ideas of their own skill. But Bentner was one of those. A lot of those players will have like one really good identifiable quality about them, like they're lightning quick, or they've got a hammer shot, or they're very skillful. But Bentner was always one of those players who didn't really have any of that. He was just sort of there and scored goals occasionally, and very often looked quite good without actually doing anything that eye catching. So it's, I mean, fair play to anyone who has confidence in themselves and toots their own horn loudly. But my God, was that unjustified?
Nicholas Bentner. We spent a lot of time talking about him, which I didn't think we would. But there you go. He's a fascinating character. That'll just about do it for this week. Before we go, Paul, what have you got in the pipeline for Athletic subscribers?
I've got a column coming up this weekend, which is going to be on the subject of how it's a chance for Chris Hughton to stamp his influence again this summer with You know, when you look at the situation with so many players on loan and so many out of contract, you know, it's going to be another summer of transition, you suspect, this summer, although he does have some interesting points of view on that himself. Beyond that, I'm going to do a look at David McGoldrick. It may prove to be an ode to David McGoldrick in a sense, but he always struck me as being a curious player at Forest, in the sense he very obviously was very, very good, but never quite did it at Forest. But since then, he's gone on to show what he's capable of at his other club. So I'm quite keen to see why that was and what the people who played with him thought about him when he was at Forest.
Yeah, absolutely beloved by his Sheffield United teammates for what he brings to them. And another player with a terrific Nottingham accent. Just pipped by Julian Bennett for me. If I'm ever in a high state of anxiety, in my head I play Julian Bennett telling me to calm down, and it really works. Nick, you'll have been preparing your 10,000-word character assassination of Andy Dibble, presumably?
Yeah, that's going out tomorrow. It feels like I've trailed this about four times now, but the interview I did with James Coppinger is, I believe, finally due to be published this weekend to coincide with his 600th league appearance for Doncaster, which should be on Saturday. There is a little kind of, obviously, you know, when someone's played for a club for 17 years with a brief 6-month hiatus at another club, you generally focus on the 16 and a half years rather than that 6 months. But there is a little a bit about his spell at Forest in there. I think the question with Coppinger was, all from the outside anyway, was always, you know, he could have played for someone better than Doncaster for a longer period of time. Although he was slightly too diplomatic to say this, I think his brief experience at Forest, which, as you remember, was in the kind of nascent shambles era of the Al-Hassawi ownership, possibly just sort of, not quite, maybe scarred him is the wrong word, but he having spent so long at Doncaster before that, he came to Forest, saw what it was like, and thought, well, if this is what other football clubs are like, I'm going to stay where I'm, you know, where I'm happy and settled and feel wanted, and there's a good atmosphere around the place. And you know, he's obviously an absolute legend at Doncaster. So yeah, that's going out on Saturday.
Good stuff. Looking forward to reading it. Remember, listener, if you're not currently a subscriber, you can sign up now for just £3.99 a month for the first 6 months by heading to theathletic.com/forestpod. That's theathletic.com/forestpod. And we'll be back same time next week when we'll look ahead through our fingers to the upcoming games against Reading and Norwich, and plenty more besides. Until then, from all of us here, it's bye for now.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.